Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the Classic Series Redrive. Check them up. Let's get started.
Welcome into the Classic Series Redrive, episode number 84. It's hard to believe it's been 84 episodes. We got Mr. Mark Hostetler in Lower Michigan, Mr. Logan Reinhold at the Logan Reinhold Tack and Western Wear mailbag and studio in what's the town again, Logan? He just shrugged his shoulders.
Waterloo, Indiana.
Yes, sir. If you're looking for any Christmas shopping, there's a pretty good spot there in Waterloo, Indiana. You'll be driving out into the middle of a bunch of fields and you're thinking to yourself, there's no Western store here. And then boom, there it is. And it's full of good merchandise. So if you're looking for any Christmas gifts, I'm sure they ship to at the Reinhold Western Wear. Google that up and hit their website. Also, Mark, have you done your Christmas shopping? I know I did some.
I did a little bit just so I don't feel like a Grinch. Speaking of clothing and merchandise, if anybody has any interest in buying some Classic Series merchandise, just go on our website, drive6.com. It's actually a really neat setup we have. Hooked up with a clothing company, and you can choose whatever logo you want on there. You can choose the Six Horse Hitch logo, the Youth Classic Cart logo, the Classic Halter logo, and or the Redrive logo on there as well. So if you fans Redrive, if you want some Redrive clothing, then it's available on drive6.com. But yeah, everything, the Classic and Classic Cart as well.
Yeah, when you go to the website, it's pretty easy. It says order merchandise, like right at the top of the website page. Mm-hmm. Just click right on that booger and takes you right to it.
And there is actually, and kudos to Carl Adi and his wife, Kayla, put this together, and there's some really nice clothing on there to buy, and hats and vests and jackets and shirts and button-down shirts and polos. It's really nice stuff, sweatshirts. So yeah, go online, drive6.com, and check it out. Buy some merchandise.
Yeah, it makes for good Christmas presents. And yeah, I know the old UPS driver, he seems to wear out tires going up and down our driveway. The bride, she fires up a lot of, there's a lot of Amazon boxes piling up in our garage.
Wow. Yeah, the little Amazon vans show up here periodically. And then this morning, the UPS guy come and he couldn't find our package. So I don't know what was going on there. He goes, I'll do my route and I'll see what I got left. So I'm like, the hell got ordered now?
You know, man. It's just, I mean, it just seems like it's an ever-changing world when it comes to that stuff. It just seems like a lot of online shopping.
Yep, pretty convenient.
Yep. How's the weather in Michigan?
Oh, it's good. Yeah, no, we've had a really nice fall. We've had some snow, but yeah, today's kind of damp and cold and cloudy, but you know, that's to expect this time of the year where we live at here off the lakes.
Yeah.
But overall, it's been pretty good. How about you guys?
You know, it's been pretty mild, really, for this time of year. We've had a couple cold nights, but for the most part, we've been above freezing almost every day. A little bit of snow on the ground, but it seems to be melts off in short order. So we haven't missed a day of driving horses due to weather, put it that way, which is a good for this time of year.
I was going to say, you're probably doing some driving and getting ready for some January shows, are you?
Yeah, we... As you might know, we made a few additions to Double S Belgians, a few extra horses around the barn. And so we've been driving quite a bit, getting ready for Loveland and Denver. First week of January is approaching quite quickly. So I think Loveland starts, I think right around the 11th or 12th of January. So sneaking up on us, and about a month left, a little under a month before we'd leave. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Then after those two, of course, 1st of February, there's a couple shows in Florida as well, in Ocala there, that Shannon and Karen put on. And
yep. So, and then a couple in Arizona.
Enos has got a new one fired up there in Arizona this year too. So there's the Queen Creek, and then there's
the Buck. I think it's called the Buckeye or something, which that just makes me think of Ohio. I don't know why, but we're doing the Buckeye in Arizona. So, I think one's on the southwest side of Phoenix and the other one's on the southeast side of Phoenix. So Florida and Arizona sounds like pretty good spots to go in February and March.
I'd say so. I'd say so.
And Denver and Loveland are always a cool trip. It can be nice weather there and it can be miserable, but I guarantee you, you'll see a lot of good hitches. You go to those two shows too. So,
yeah, Loveland's always a little laid back and schedule's nice. And you get to Loveland, to Denver, and it's not a horrible schedule, but it's just more of a, you know, stock show kind of feel to it. It's always cool in that ring. And it's, I don't know, I always consider it one of them shows that, you know, you win a class there. It's driving out of that ring is always kind of cool. It kind of stacks up to, you know, Calgary and the Royal and, you know, the Big E, maybe some of them shows that are just mean a little bit more when you do well, you know.
But yeah, exactly.
A lot of it is because of the history and everything involved there at Denver. It's always fun to show there.
Cool thing about a lot of those shows too, like Denver, prime example, I think there's been like three or four hitches that are currently showing horses that the owners basically got started because they were at the stock show watching a show like that, and it gave them the bug. So those type of shows just seem to garner a lot of attention from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Anything when you're on the road,
anything new with the classic series?
Well, the voting, we're recording this on Monday evening, but yeah, the voting ends, tonight. And, so yeah, we should for the finals judges. So we should know that here fairly quickly on who everybody selected to be the judges for the finals for the sixes. And then, yeah, just a reminder, the coffee, just buy coffee to support the youth as much as you can, sparkplug.com, or you can go on drive6.com as well and order some coffee as well. But
yeah, lots of different flavors too on the website there, the sparkplug.com, sparkplugcoffee.com or whatever. It's lots of different varieties and options on there.
Yep. But no, everything, see, it's kind of the, you know, a little bit of the slow time and the winter here. And, you know, we're just trying to keep things afloat. And as, you know, hasn't really been advertised a whole lot yet. We're just kind of, I believe tonight we have a call to iron out the final details on for sure on the cart finals, the classic cart finals at the finals this year. Instead of having a ladies cart class, we'll take the top 15 point getters, regardless of breed, will be coming to Shipshawana to the finals this fall to compete for a classic cart championship. We're still going to have our regionals as well, but we're going to be taking the top 15 point getters, like I said, regardless of what breed, and bringing up Shipshawana, hook three times and crown a cart champion along with our other sixes and halter.
You hook all 3 days for that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yep, that's the plan. So
might be a few horses in the sixes there that get a little tired by the last day.
Yeah, well, it's one of them deals where everything else is based on three hooks for the six.
Right.
The kids drive three times. The halter people show three times. And it's kind of like, well, I'd say you hook it three times just like the rest.
Yeah, and that kind of gives some incentive for, there's going to be some hitches that maybe don't qualify for the six. Gives them some incentive to maybe push with that cart horse. They can go be a part of the finals. And
then you, Yeah. And then you don't go and just hook one time. Like, you know, you get something to do every day.
Right.
You know, that horse as well. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So we need to get that spread out. So people, like you said, people can push a little bit if they have interest in wanting to be a part of the finals and they can't make it with a six, they can still come with a cart, hopefully. So.
Absolutely.
But yeah, other than that, think things are going along pretty good, and we kind of had an interesting episode here. We chatted with Jonathan and Marissa Cush. We, of course, that Eastern State sale, Eastern Draft Breeders event, was in Mount Hope, Ohio last month. And Jonathan sits on the board with that. So we chatted about that event that's going on and with them as their livelihood and daily lives and just good people. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect. Super intelligent people, like just really cool to sit and visit with. And Jonathan has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to pedigrees and draft horses, but obviously Belgians and draft horses in general. And then also just worldly people. Like they seem like they have a lot of knowledge about a lot of things.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. They bought their first horse and had to tie it to a tree in the backyard to building a barn. And now they're busy breeding and raising horses, and they've raised some good ones too.
Just a little redrive business. If you're interested in advertising with the Classic Series redrive, I think we're in like podcast downloads in 27 or 28 different countries. I got quite a few text messages every year. People who listen on Spotify does this deal where it tells you what your most listened to things are and everything. And we were quite a few people's most listened to podcasts. So there was a few people spent a lot of hours with us last year. So yeah. Shout out to them.
I get the same text messages or people, yeah, Snapchats or like screenshots of their Spotify, you know, their Spotify.
Yeah. So thanks to all you guys listening to us. And we never really thought that it was going to end up being as big as it has, but it's really blowing up. A lot of people listening out there, and we do appreciate it. Makes it worth the while.
Yeah, for sure. And if you have any interest in maybe advertising on it, just reach out to Logan or Kyle or I, and we can try to get you scheduled in there as best we can. And also, if you have any mailbag questions, don't be afraid to drop by our podcast at anyclassicseries.com, I believe it is the email address, and drop by a mailbag question or anything else you might, any suggestions or anything like that.
Yeah, and don't forget to support our advertisers, the advertisers that support us. Appreciate your support.
Yep, for sure. I think that's about it. I think we can wrap it up. Enjoy episode 84. Yep. See you guys down the road.
Penwoods Equine Products is a family-owned and operated business that strives to support the growth, performance, and longevity of your equine family with our premium nutrition supplements. We make all of our products with locally sourced ingredients right here in the USA, so you can always be sure you're getting the highest quality. We've always been horse people. Our products were developed to take care of our own horses, and we continue to back our supplements with real-world horse owner experience. We're proud of the results, and we love sharing our generations of equine knowledge to help meet all of your horse's needs. We want to get to know you and your horses, and we're here to help with any questions you have. So reach out to us. You're part of the Penwoods family. You can visit us at penwoods.com, email us at info@penwoods.com, or follow us on social media.
We're joined today from New Philadelphia, Ohio, Mr. Jonathan Cush and Mrs. Marissa Greenslate Cush, or how does that operate? I'm just looking at Facebook, but.
Yeah, good question. Well,
he paid a lot of money. Quiet fast.
He paid a lot of money for the last name Cush. So more personally, I go by Cush. Professionally is more Greenslade.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Oh. So, Jonathan, give us the backstory on how you started in the Belgian breed.
Pretty humbly, to be honest. it all started, you guys are familiar with Steve McQueen. He doesn't live far from me. And when I was a kid, I was a horse crazy kid. My parents did not have horses, first of all. So we did not grow up. Or, I mean, I eventually did, but did not have draft horses as a kid. We bought our first riding horse out of the Sugar Creek Livestock Auction, which is a similar to like Shipsy style auction.
This thing tried to kill you is what you're saying.
No.
Oh, it was a good.
No, doesn't God protects the ignorant or whatever. I mean, we really lucked out. We had her for like 30 years. And Steve had worked for my godparents and consequently was the only person I knew with a horse trailer. And he hauled her home. I was probably 11 years old. And we tied her to a tree in the backyard on my dad's 1 acre lot of ground in town there. So now we were in the horse business. That was kind of how it got started. And then I'm the oldest of five boys. And that particular horse took us all through 4-H. And at our county fair, Steve always showed draft horses there. It's at my home county fair is where the Dover sale takes place. So we were always hung around in the draft horse barn around Steve, and a lot of the people who are up there really got a liking to that. My dad eventually bought a team of Belgian mares from Atlee 2 J. Yoder out in Bex Mills at the Dover sale. They were teenage mares in foal. And I was in college at the time. Brought them home, and I just thought that was about the coolest thing we had done with horses for a long time. And we started trying to show some of them at the county fair and doing things. Didn't really start off the best, but we raised a couple colts out of them, eventually sold them and the gelding I had bought, different things. Bought one good halter mare off of Larry Pergolini at the Dover sale and decided to start showing horses. So
Did you tie those mares to the tree too, or by that time did you have
no? By that time we had a little shed barn. It was an old machine shed that we actually was already put up one place. We went and tore it down. We were very budgetary at the beginning. We tore that barn down because it was about wore out and put it back up, and that was a place that we could, have a couple more horses. People had given us horses over the years. Those are always the best kind. That's how we started raising colts when I was a kid.
Original ones were not like the foundation broodmares to the...
No, they weren't. They were just introductory. Mares that would teach us a bunch, right? And we would do parades and all kinds of stuff like that. But Steve had the Chestnut's Rocky horse at the time. And we would breed him to that horse and try to, upgrade the program a little bit. And he introduced me to my farrier, which was, still is, Emery Stutzman. And Emery was down at the Louisville show when I was in college. I went to school in Miami of Ohio, which is down by Cincinnati. And I skipped school and borrowed a fraternity brother's car and drove down there to go watch a horse show. And he was actually there with Brian Winkler at the time. So Emery was showing a mare called Rolling Hill Shania. She was a Daleview Luther that ended up being the mother to Trademark and Briar Hill Bonner. That was her mother. Emery raised those two. And Brian was showing the L.A. Tammy's Maverick horse as a two-year-old and a little filly called SB Master Dream, which would eventually be Power Play's mother. So it just happens that that's how I met those guys, really got the hook for showing, and kind of went from there.
Well, Larry Pergolini's mare, though, that we still have some that go back to her.
Great granddaughters, actually. Yeah. But that one. So when we sold all of those and bought that, we took them to Dover and had about half the money we needed to buy a good one. Right. After we sold a pot, some of those younger things, bought that mare and started showing. And we used to go to like the Ohio State Fair to watch Steve show. I think he introduced me to Jason Hansberger. Jason had me invited us to come to the Expo. The Ohio Expo is a warm-up show in June in Hilliard that he ran. Up until then, we had just done some county fairs, and we were using, some old wore-out pickup trucks, and you should have seen us going down. I think we blew up three transmissions in one summer.
The Hansbergers blew tires.
Exactly. We had an old rusty bumper pull trailer that we would jam as many horses. We took all the slants and dividers out and would jam horses in there. And my brother, number three, Michael, he was really into the showing with me, and we did a bunch of that. But eventually we went down to the expo, and I was fairly confident at the time going down there. I thought it was just for Ohio people. And when we pulled in, there was just semis galore. That was back. Jason was working for Owl Creek, and Hammersmith would have been there, and Oak Haven, and Hocking Valley, foreshadowing, right? Hocking Valley was there.
That's when you fell in love, and she waited another 15 years.
I can still remember the first time I saw her driving into the ring there with...
What a love story.
Chip and Donnie win a team, and the one horse was screwing off, and Marissa reached underneath there with a whip and wrapped him right around the ankle and barked at him and drove this team of perch and geldings in there, won the class. And I thought, now that's a woman right there. That's something I could.
I'd like her to whip me someday.
So that's when we first met. So that's been a long time. And she and Michelle were together, and they came down. Everybody was really hospitable, right? The draft horse community is extremely welcoming. And I got stalled next to Ron Mack at that particular show, who, you know, was quick to encourage us to come to the Ohio State Fair. So then we took horses there, and then it just continued to snowball. It's where I met Rod for the first time, and Rod Kohler. We were second. Mark Berry was judging, and we were second in our class with this good Haldermere that I bought. And I was pretty disappointed and let down. Thought, man, if all the shows are going to be like this, we're really going to struggle. He was showing the old
RC. Was there only two in the class, or why were you so disappointed?
There was a pile. Because I figured, you know, we could probably get something done here. Right. But it was the old RG Cindy mare, which to this day is still my favorite mare of all time. Like, I just didn't realize we were showing against, you know, one of the greats right there in front of us. But so, yeah, I got to be pretty quick friends with Rod.
What year was that?
That would have been 2004.
Okay.
Yeah, Oak Haven was kind of in their heyday, right?
So Cindy was Justine's mother, right?
Mother, correct. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, that's Marissa kind of came down to our stalls with Michelle and invited us to the washerboard games. What do they call the other?
Cornhole.
Pre cornhole. They used to throw washers. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's terrible. Terrible, loud note. We still have one of them if anybody would like one. We cart it around and never use it. I'd be happy to sell it to somebody. I was really taken back with the whole thing. And so spent my summer showing horses till I got out of school. And then, just kept adding shows here and there where we could. I always wanted to drive more than ever show Halter. Most people are surprised to know that. I never wanted to waste my time showing Holder. As my brothers grew up and went to school and or moved away, it just became less feasible all the time to drive. So we've always been raising horses. I really haven't bought that many horses over the years. Most of the stuff that we've shown, we've always raised. That's just kind of been our way. So, that's how we got started. And that's where we are today. We raise 6 to 10 colts. Depending, usually keep around 20 head of horses, which is too many for us. But yeah, so just ever changing.
So to get back to it, it started off with the your very first horse, and obviously you showed it and stuff. How did that evolution take place? You found horses at sales. Did you lean on somebody to kind of?
Yeah, so that mare that Larry had, Steve McQueen told my dad that if these boys want a serious halter mare, this would be a good one. So we went in there and bid on her, and she went over the budget that Michael and I had for selling horses. And my mother, who's to this day, God bless her, just not into horses, right? But she leaned over to my dad and said, John, you know, she really is pretty. So she kind of twisted we bought her, and so from then on, a lot of my education came from guys like Emery and Brian. I spent a lot of time with Emery. Matter of fact, I rode around. I thought I wanted to be a horseshoer for a minute. So for about 8 months after I got out of college, I rode around apprentice horseshoeing and got to see a bunch of horses.
Quickly realized that that was a terrible idea.
Yeah, I wasn't made for that, right? So, that's where a lot of my education came from. I would just get in a truck with anybody that would let me ride along and go. And Rod probably thought I was a creepy kid, but I hung around okay. I would always find people that had the end result that I wanted, right? And I always looked up.
Boy, this creepy kid with the great hair keeps coming around.
But, I always wanted to make my horses look like, you know, Rod. I always thought that was the one thing I could control, right, is fit. I really couldn't control the outcome of some of what we could afford or what we bred, you know, how they were raised, but I could always try to make them look the part. So I would always kind of hang around Rod and try to figure out what he was doing. And he
5-Star Harness, your 5-star source for custom built biothane show harness, where passion for horses drives innovation and fuels hard work to make your dreams come true. Whether you are training, driving for pleasure, participating in fraternities or shows, it is imperative to have quality, comfortable, well-fitted harness that stands up to any curveball that may come your way. Each harness is carefully crafted and both comfort and safety in mind for horse and driver, drawing from personal horse training experience and mentorship from drivers and trainers in the industry. Your horses are your personal stars, and we build harness to reflect that bond. Enhancing your horse is where it's at. Our popular options include 5-Star's signature deep curve breastplate to fit young horses featuring lots of adjustment as the horse grows. Or if you're starting out and need multiple sizes for different horses without investment in a lot of collars. Also offered are show collars and Scotch tops for more traditional look. So whether you are driving a single, a 6, an 8, or anything in between, 5-Star Harness has got you covered. We love special projects and custom orders, so don't hesitate to call or text 519-323-7008. Once again, the number 519-323-7008. Follow us on Facebook at 5-Star Harness to view multiple options. Look for Wilma at some of the upcoming shows and sales. And in the meantime, don't hit the rails.
I always thought his wife, Missy, who, you know, the sweetest, most welcoming person. And I always thought she was a great mane roller. And so I asked Rod if she would teach me how to roll manes. And she did. Gave me a couple quick lessons. And Rod told me if I practiced all winter, he would let me. Rod would let me roll manes for him at the shows if I got good enough at it. So, and he would let me clean harness and all that kind of stuff. So that was...
let you clean harness.
Yeah, wow. So I hung around Oak Haven quite a bit. I still do, obviously. I must be attracted to green. Anybody that would sit on a tack box with me or teach me anything, I was all about it, right? And the one place, we didn't have a lot of success early on showing horses, but the one place that always seemed to go well was the junior stuff. My brother would qualify to be in the junior division, and he was champion showman like at Ohio and the Great Lakes and Indiana, like places like, you know, that's where we had some success early on, which was really important to keep us motivated going forward. And that's one thing that to this day, I'm always pretty passionate and always willing to judge junior stuff and try to help out just so they know how important that was for us early on. Just a lot of school of hard knocks and people that were willing to teach. And when I was willing to listen, I'm certainly just an amalgamation of a lot of other good ideas, right? Everything that I do, I stole from somebody else. Just the things that I liked that other people did. So.
You want to go down the Marissa road and get your story of Marissa. And then we can kind of conjoin them together and move forward. Or
I think we should.
I grew up with Halflingers. So around here, that's known as the garden pony. But I grew up with Halflingers and through 4-H, my advisor was Al Seidel, and he had always had Percherons. So he actually then would go to some of the bigger shows. We did a lot of just county fairs with our Halflingers, and then he'd do, you know, the state fairs and Lansing. At that time, Michigan State was still going. So I'd go with Al to a bunch of those, which ended up being then there were a few of us in the 4-H group at that time, which would be like Kyle Love and then Hillary Bordner, which is Kyle's cousin. So we would do a lot with him. Well, then from there, he kind of, pawned us off on other people, I guess. And then we kind of all went to different places from there. I'd say my first bigger person that I helped would have been Nick and Sherry Wagner. And that was when their kids were still really little, prior to Ross going there and all that. So from there, I guess straight from there, I probably went to Hocking, actually.
No, you went.
Where?
Prefort. Didn't you before Hocking, or is that after?
Well, Prefort, I did a little stint with Prefort there. That was still when I wasn't full-time at Hocking yet. And I was just kind of more show help at Hocking. But then I went to Prefort. Rose had to have surgery. And during that time, I went out and helped Jason then with Prefort, just kind of during her surgery. So I was only there for, I don't remember if it was like 6 weeks or something. I think. And then,
You're on a video. If you look up some of these old Prefort videos, you will see Marissa in there putting harness on Prefort horses. It's hilarious.
Yeah. You should. Oh. Why is it funny?
Well, you had those high-waisted jeans you were wearing back in the days.
He just couldn't resist. Like, he just went on about how, like, the most beautiful thing I ever seen. When Marissa...
She was in her show clothes when I first saw her.
And then now he's like, all right, we got to get the power dynamic back.
That's nice.
Google this and see how ridiculous she looked.
We'll
talk about this later.
Not on camera. So from there, then after they sold out, and I think it was like 2005. And from there, I kind of just became show help for a few different people. I worked for Coleman for a little bit. He was with Glenview there for a little bit. I worked for him there.
So Hocking Valley, that was Larry Addington and Tom Justin, right? They were partners with that, or?
Well, started off just, the owner's name is actually Charles and Julie Bolton from Mentor, Ohio, but the farm is down in Hocking Hills area. It started off just them being the owner, but then what happened was they were more or less wanting to sell out. But then Tom had approached us and said, he wanted to give it another, year or whatever, and asked, but he didn't necessarily want to go out and buy more horses. So we ended up then just taking, I think he brought us like 4 horses. So then we did end up with an 8th then that last year, which would have technically been 4 of Tom Justin's and 4 of ours that we showed. So that was kind of the end of that then. I think we only did that for a year with him. But then between helping Coleman at a few different stops that he's had, then Jim Westbrook, Oak Haven.
See where this is all coming together?
Crossing.
Yeah.
My question is, when you went to Hilliard there with Hocking Valley and obviously impressed John,
uh-huh.
You remember seeing him there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Give me a little credit.
I mean, come on. What are you saying?
Yeah.
I'm just, I didn't know. I just.
Her and Michelle took notice. Come on now.
Yeah.
Well, I would be surprised your awesome hair you have.
We're not on.
We'll get to that later. Go ahead, Marissa.
Yeah. So, Ohio was actually always one of our favorite shows, just because it was always just the Ohio breeders, right? So,
Hitches, it was really low key.
Or Ohio Hitches, whatever. Yeah.
It was, Larry would have been there and the Mylanders, Seabolds, the Hoofprint Shapers, Flat Rock.
Oh gosh, yeah. I didn't even name them.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, you helped Greg and
a lot
back in.
Yeah, a lot. They, so where I technically grew up, if you went 10 minutes east of me was Flat Rock, and then 10 minutes west of me was Oak Haven. So, and then actually, if you went north of me, it would be, we're kind of in the pony capital of the world around there too, growing up. Like Kyle and Kaylee Love, they actually grew up on my street. They were north of town. I was south of town. So there were a lot of horse people in general in our area.
Did you guys go to Calgary one year with Hawking Valley?
Yeah, we did.
I think I remember, that's my first memory of you, because I would have been probably a youth exhibitor at that time because I'm younger, like way younger.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks.
Yeah.
That was the year that we had the Brandon World Show. So we came up to Calgary and Brandon and then went to Jordan on the way back.
Okay.
So yeah, that would have been Shell and I at that time with Hawking.
That would have been like 96? No, 2004,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, gosh.
Yeah, I was still a youth exhibitor.
Lordy, Kyle. Yes, 2004. Like
just barely a youth exhibitor. I was a youth exhibitor, but still old enough to drink beer in Canada.
Yeah,
but then Marissa and I have been friends for a long time since that first time at the expo in 04.
Yeah.
Over a game of washers.
Yeah.
Yep. And then wash and harness at Oak Haven. And yeah. So
he wouldn't talk.
So who asked who out for, like, how did it become, like, how did it actually become a thing?
I finally convinced her.
Oh my God. Here we go.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think.
Like, let's get the actual real details here.
We have to get Maury on here.
I will just say what was really funny was the year that I helped Oak Haven that summer, and Rod used to always laugh because he'd be like, "Oh, Cushy's coming over. Marissa, do you have anything to say? Like, you better get it out before he comes, because that's the only time you're quiet is when he's around." So Rod used to always make fun of me that sometimes we need Cushy around here just to shut her up. But anyway,
this is all hearsay. She really didn't.
No, Rod would agree with me on that. But anyway, so then I don't know who asked who out. We used to always just kind of find ourselves talking, like there'd be a party going, you know, and at that time, too, there were parties that happened where everybody came together and we'd always just be kind of sitting off on our own. But we never really, nothing happened until,
12 years ago.
Yeah. 7 years later or some 10 years later. It was like 10 years later, because then. But
I was just kind of waiting for her to be available. That's the nice way to say it, right? Like, you ever have that, you know, how can I say this? She was a little.
This is a podcast.
I'm trying to think. I should have wrote this down ahead of time.
Everything goes.
Yeah. Interesting. I probably wasn't. My horsemanship level was not at a point to take on such a young spirited filly and get her where does that make sense? Is that a nice place saying that?
The Smith family has been in the meat snack business since 1975. There are now four generations of Smiths working with Glenwood Snacks. Glenwood Beef Jerky is made with solid pieces of 100% premium beef and smoked with real wood smoke. Their jerky is in high protein, low in calories, and darn good to eat. Also, look out for new lines of meat sticks. Look for the SS Belgians, the equine ambassadors of Glenwood Beef Jerky, at a show near you. Browse cows are many flavors of 100% beef jerky, signature meat sticks, and snack bundles at glenwoodsnacks.com. Follow on Facebook, Instagram, or by calling 208-624-9851. Orders over $50 ship for free. Glenwood Snacks.
For the longest time, I didn't know her last name, but by God, you could go anywhere at any horse show and say, do you know Marissa? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They didn't ask Marissa who. Right. So, yeah. So, right. Just had to get a little age on her and calm down maybe a little. Right. So, no. I probably would have started dating her sooner, but one Indiana State Fair. Belgian week, run won the six, and we were all in the aisle, and it happened to be one. My parents don't come to a lot of horse shows, but they happened to show up there that night, and Rod was having a party and was offering, we'll say offering loosely, my mother some Malibu right out of the bottle. And it was kind of a rager. Rod was pretty pumped, and my parents are there, and up walks Marissa, and yeah, she was in rare form, and finally met them, probably not in the best way. And I thought, how would I ever take that girl home? Tell mom and dad, yep, remember that girl at Indiana State Fair? He hasn't forgot that to this day, if you ask him. You know,
I still hear about it.
Remembers the first time he met her. Yeah. So, but anyhow, no, that's how it all started. And I convinced her to move this direction. And
so what year was that? Like when all this became.
I moved here in 2011. I think.
We'll go with that.
I think it was 2011.
So.
So what's the daily lives of Jonathan and Marissa?
Up early, chores.
Till 10 or.
What's that?
Sleep till 10 in the morning?
No, no.
Yeah.
No. So we both have full-time jobs that keep us pretty busy. So we're up early, do chores, go to work all day, go home, do chores, do whatever else needs done at the barn. We'll figure out what they broke or who's hurt or whatever, right? The typical horse stuff. Work with what we can. Usually we're out there till about dark, which this time of year is earlier.
A little bit earlier, but normally dinner around 9.
Go to bed and repeat.
Yeah.
So Jonathan, you're in your family's business?
Yep. So my dad started a financial services business when I was probably 10 years old. So I went to school as a finance major, came to work here, got my CFP designation, been here ever since.
Do they ever tell you in financial school to stay away from horses or?
You know, that's usually the first piece of advice I offer anyone. That unless you just hate money, like you just can't stand to be around it, then if that's the case, then get yourself a horse. But otherwise, you probably not a good idea. So,
and Marissa, you own your own business?
Yeah. So I do, I'll just say animal chiropractic, massage, MagnaWave, laser. So I am very fortunate, and that was part of the reason that I moved over here was from New Philly to Sugar Creek is only like 20 minutes. So I can be in the heart of Amish country and basically a half hour from our house. So every night I can actually go home. Prior to me moving here, I used to do a lot more traveling, lot more hotels and that kind of thing. So then when I moved this direction, I kind of cut out for the most part, a lot of my traveling. And now unless you're within a couple hours from here, I don't necessarily go. But I'm in Amish country at least 3 days a week, sometimes 4 days a week, and then still have one day of, I'll say more traveling outside of that. But yeah. We normally are both try to be on the road by 8 o'clock in the morning. And then whoever gets home first goes to the barn first and do it all again the next day.
Is there like some animosity or like if one cleans more stalls than the other or?
Nope.
That never happens at your house?
No,
there's no scorekeeping or.
Well, we do it. So here's we pen pack our stalls with straw.
Okay.
So cleaning stall. We used to Friday when we first got together, Marissa would drive down from Clyde, which is about 2 hours. She'd try to get here before I got off work, and we would spend Friday nights and all day Saturday cleaning stalls. And then we would do something Saturday night, and then she would drive home on Sunday. So we did that for a long time, and then we switched over to pen packing with straw. And so now we only clean stalls every 60 days or so, 60 to 90 days, depending on what time of year it is.
So we both have to be there for that.
So yeah, there's no getting out of that day.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. There's lots of scorekeeping at my house.
No, we don't.
10-5 today. I try to let Marcia win.
We don't. We know that we're both really, you know, kind of where we're at in our schedules or whatever. Just
do it. I'm
slammed, she'll do them, or vice versa. Or if we're both around, we both do them. It's just kind of how it.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Marissa.
Well, there are times where if I know he has a late meeting, then I'll just go to the barn and get that done. But that also means he has to make dinner that night.
There you go.
Are you a good cook, Jonathan?
You've seen me, right? Okay. So,
yes.
All my other brothers are skinny, which means they probably can't cook. But, I'm all right at it. I enjoy it.
Shoot.
So did the Belgian operation, did it evolve and grow and change when Marissa came on board? Or
that's a good question. It's been ever evolving, right? So from the day of tying the horse to the tree, you know, that like that first day we didn't have a lead rope. Steve McQueen gave me a lead rope. That's how much that is my she came with the halter, and that's all the tack we ever had. So every year since then has always been adding and, you know, ever evolving, trying to get where ideally we'd like to be. So, but we were in the process of putting up a new barn at that time when you first came.
Yeah.
It continues to change. The process with the horses is not dramatically different, right? We still do most everything the same. We have more horses now
probably than what you did when I was.
Yeah. Yeah. But
how many horses are at the farm now?
We just had a couple sales, so we're down to,
I think we're at 15 now.
Yeah. We try to be at 14 going into winter.
Yeah.
But so we're a little heavy, just one though. So that's not bad. Then we'll have, I think we're having 6 colts this year. So get you right back up in the 20s pretty fast.
Uh-huh.
Tell the story about, you got a really nice camper now, but I just heard this actually, Jonathan, I was judging at Center Hall and, obviously you don't hang out at the barn when you're judging, and Jonathan's the announcer in Center Hall. So it was like, well, let's hang out till the next class or whatever. So we go back to the camper and I'm like, damn, this is nice. And he's like, well, we had to get a new camper because the old one. Give us that story. Because that it's a pretty unique story. I had a new appreciation for your driving abilities after I heard.
Oh, me too.
We would like to thank Shipshawana Harness and Supply in Shipshawana, Indiana. Mr. Bob Schrock, if you're looking for products for the show ring or at the farm from A to Z, anything you need, horse nutrition, tack, you name it, make sure you check them out, ShipshawanaHarness.com. Follow them on Facebook or visit their shop in beautiful Shipshawana Amish country Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. and Saturday, 8 a.m. till 12 noon. Call Mr. Bob Schrock, 260-768-7254 for all your draft horse needs.
Well, first of all, with the camper thing, it's, you know, that was also an evolution. For the longest time, I used to sleep in the stalls, right? You know, there we all did that for a long time. Campers weren't really a thing. But Marissa, that is one thing she changed. When she first came here, she wasn't going to sleep in stalls.
Well, you don't have to say it like that. I used to sleep in stalls
I know,
as well.
I know, but we were, getting a little age. So we were bought a starter camper, and then we sold that one and bought this camper that Kyle's asking about. And I was actually on my way to Center Home. And we were not 20 miles from home, and a massive rainstorm came up over a knob on the interstate, and a car flipped over in front of us and was spinning around on its roof. And everybody was slamming on their brakes, and I was going at an approach. Well, I was going at the speed limit in the hammer lane. I just got off onto the left-hand shoulder and thought, I'll bring this down to a nice slow stop, because there was no way I was going to get stopped before we did that. And then a semi truck in front of me had the same idea. He got over in front of me. So that put me in the median in the middle of a monsoon. So I was afraid of getting stuck. So the solution was just to hammer down, right? Like, just keep the momentum going and fly down through there. And we off-roaded, and I just kept asking Marissa, is it still back there? Right. Look out the back. We still got the camper on here. We've got out of that, got back on the road. I was pretty impressed with myself.
So you're in between, like, you're in the ditch. Like, you're,
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
There's mud and grass flying, and you're just hammering down.
Yeah.
Well, and by ditch, remember around here, the ditches are hills in between.
We were
the median and that part, you had to go like up. So we like went up on top of the median.
It was banked to the center, and we went up on top of there. It was all, I mean, it was pretty impressive. I'm not going to lie. Kept it together, my cool. And, but as we're driving down the road, I look in the side view and I started adjusting it because the camper was leaning hard to the left. Goodness gracious. I can't believe that side view moved that much. Well, I couldn't move the side view enough to straighten her up. So we got off the interstate at the next exit, and I looked, and all the shackles and springs and everything on that side of the camper were gone. And it had twisted so hard that it ripped the roof off the camper, and all the cabinets on the inside were cracked and busted. Everything,
the bunk beds
were broken half.
Yeah.
Yeah. It twisted the frame right on the camper. Yeah. So
and the truck was fine.
Truck was fine. Yeah.
Truck was perfect.
Yeah.
So we turned around and drove home at a, fairly slow, but as we got out of the rain, about 10 miles down the road, a guy comes up to me waving his arms and put his window down and said, your camper's on fire. I thought, oh, this is good. So I pulled off the side of the road. And what had happened is when those shackles broke, the wheels were touching each other. And they were rubbing, right, and creating smoke. And it was fine when I was in the rain, but when I got on the dry ground, they started smoking really bad. Nothing was on fire. It just looked like it was on fire. So we slowly limped it back home and,
jumped in the car and
jumped in the car and went back to my announcing job. But the adjuster was pretty impressed. He wanted to know what I hit. I said, nothing. He said, I've never seen this kind of damage to a camper. I said, well, you are welcome. So. Yeah. So then we had to. Now we're on camper number three.
Yeah.
But so yeah, that's not even more. My most. I thought he was going to ask me about driving. He said driving to New Jersey. Anyhow.
Oh.
So.
Go ahead and tell that story now.
Yeah, you started it.
Oh my gosh. So. For all of you listeners that are doing this on a podcast, back in the days prior to technology, GPSs weren't really all that popular. So just bear that in mind.
It went MapQuest printed off, then TomTom, and then actually it's on your phone now.
Yeah. So this was probably pre all that. I don't even know. Anyhow,
this is the MapQuest era that you print off your computer, but you didn't print it off.
No, I probably did do that. But these little events led me to meet all kinds of people. I went and showed at the Keystone. This was back in the Tammy's Maverick days. Took him out there. And my father has never been, while he is supportive, he doesn't appreciate showing horses. He doesn't understand, right? So I had drove out there by myself, showed Holder, and the Big Six was that night at Keystone. This is back when it was a pretty good size hit show. And I had called home to check in, and he said, "You're coming home, right?" And I said, "No, I'd like to stay and watch the six." He says, "We got work to do. You need to get home." So I get in the truck and I hop on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Not all that happy about it, driving home in the dark. And I got to the toll booth and paid my toll, and it was like $1.50 different than it was on the way out. And I thought, now what in the world? Somebody is sticking me someplace here. So I paid it. I drive through the toll booth and it says, "Welcome to New Jersey." So that's the opposite direction of Ohio, for those of you who've never been to the Keystone. The turnpike, turnpike looks the same either direction, right? I mean, they did have a compass in the truck. I just didn't care to look at it. So I had to then, and this, so that's a good 4+ hours the wrong direction. So I turned around, drove back, and unloaded the horse, put him back in his stall, and walked down to where the party was going on. I think it was a great transportation that night, because they had ended up winning the six that I missed. And I saw Rod Kohler there, and he said, "What in the world are you doing here? I thought you left." And I said, "Well, I did." And he says, "Well, I don't understand, right?" So I made the mistake of telling Rod about my mistake, which he clearly wanted to let everybody else know how foolish I had been. So that's where I probably met Robert Detweiler, I'm pretty sure, the Nevergold brothers and some of those guys. So, yeah, that was, it worked out. But you should have seen the look of the people that were stalled next to me when I walked that horse back in, put him back in the stall. I mean, I had been gone for a while already.
So. 8 hours.
But still to this day, you can't tell him east or west.
I'm much better with right, left.
Yeah.
Just right, lefts are good. I can handle that.
Like even at the, just this past weekend at the sale, or past couple days at the sale, somebody said, made some comment about which direction.
They said it's at the north end of the barn. I said, "That doesn't help." just point, right? So, but anyhow. So.
I can't say too much because I'm not a whole lot different. It drives me nuts when they say we're going to reverse at the west end. And it's like, oh.
Unless they have a big west.
Marcia, where is the ring man standing?
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Eastern Breeders Sale.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Really? How did it come about? Roughly 3 years ago, Monroe Yoder, who goes by Sunset Acres, he's a Percheron guy, was looking to do something that was a little different and try to create an event surrounding young horses, right? Something that was more for the breeding end of things. A lot of sales at the time were, or I still think, you know, they're heavily focused on driving horses, 3-year-olds or better, right? When guys go, and those are oftentimes the highlights, and really wanted a place to, an event surrounded by breeders, their breeding programs, and the young horses. And he had a group of us meet together at his place to try to discuss his idea, and ended up on the committee was me, Monroe, and a guy named Mark Yoder for Silve Pertrons. They own the Rosslyn Riley horse. And so we were the three, and we just started trying to brainstorm. We spent about a year thinking of ways that we could make an event that involved a sale, but yet could be more than a sale. We surveyed different venues to have it, when we were going to have it, all these things. But yeah, so it ended up being at Mount Hope. We are using their event center at Mount Hope, which is the only horse event that takes place in there. It is a much more of a, what do you want to call it? Convention style, vendor style building, high polished floors. But they're really good to it. I can't say enough good things about how accommodating they have been. But we wanted to kind of be a select sale where people would bring the finest of what their program has to represent. So we only have 160 spots usually. That's kind of where we cap it. We do want to incentivize people to bring some of those really good colts. Part of the way that we're doing that is we have an incentive program that operates similar to a futurity. But we pay out $70,000 across six classes at the Eastern Breeders. We have four classes for yearling holder and then two cart classes. The yearling holder classes are divided by breed and by sex, where the cart classes are just divided by breed. And it pays $5,000 to win any one of those, $3,000 for second, $2,000 for third, and then $1,000 and $1,000 down to fifth. We stop at fifth. But anything that goes through the sale is eligible to participate in the incentive program. So if you were to buy a weanling, you can bring it back as a yearling and as a two-year-old for that part. This year would have been, so last year was our first sale. This year was the first year for the incentive program. Really went smooth, had a lot of good help. And judges, we had Jason Hosberger, Pat Stokes, and Jeff Fisk do that. Everything is panel judged. We try to get somebody from each breed to be represented. So that was how we set that up. But yeah, we also are very big into the trying to get as many stallions there as possible. So we sold this year, we had, I think 120 service fees on 80 or 90 stallions. Of that, we had just about 40 stallions on premises. We give them the opportunity and the schedule to drive in our ring to, lead them in hand. We have the big service auction at the, after dinner. We provide a dinner on Thursday night. So after that, we do have that, and all of the proceeds, all the commission from the sale, all the money that's raised from the service fee is what goes to fund the incentive program. Our committee is completely volunteer. We don't take anything out of the sale. So the more that these things sell for and the bigger the average, the more that goes into the pot that's available for next year's incentive program. But yeah, we were really just trying to create an event that was of the highest caliber that would help educate and incentivize draft horse enthusiasts to dig in and look at these younger horses and maybe provide the opportunity for newcomers that say, hey, maybe I can't afford a $30,000 mare or whatnot, but maybe I can come here and buy a really good foal out of some type of mare like that to kind of get started and to grow with and have the opportunity to come back and participate in the incentive program. So...
imagine driving from one of the smoothest riding carriages on the market while training for your upcoming driving season. Now, let Twisted Luck Carriages help you with a smooth transition. With our new and used and consigned carriages, containers direct to the U.S. and Canada, and a rapidly growing parts department available on our online store, we are your one-stop shop for all your carriage needs. Twisted Luck is excited to announce that for the holiday season, we will be offering some great discounts. For more information and to check out our online store, visit twistedluck.com. Now is the time to design your new carriage. Call Rex Mann at 405-326-5623 or visit our website at twistedluck.com. Twisted Luck Carriages, where if you can dream it, we can build it.
Yeah, there's a couple unique twists we do for our stallion service auction this year. We gave away four world-class carriages. They're similar to the Leon-style carriage, but we partnered with Weaver Wagons, and we had four other sponsors that really helped us out. That would have been Penwood's Equine Supply, NNA Harness, United Fence, and Trail Farm Supply. Those were our four big sponsors that went with us on the carriages. And so in the event of the, or throughout the auction, we reserved two for Pertrons, two for Belgians. And of those, how we break it up, if you're a consigner of a stallion, for every service fee you sell, we put a ticket in the box. If you bring the horse, we put another ticket in the box, and then we draw for a carriage for just the consigners of those stallions. And then we have one for everyone that you buy a service fee. We put a ticket in a box, and then at the end of the night, we draw and we give away those carriages. So really trying to get people to bring horses out into the public. We get a lot of compliments on that from a variety of people that really like being able to see all of these stallions in one place. So, yeah, it's a...
To add on that, John, I went down on Thursday, and that was the reason I went. I just didn't know where I could go in one place to see 40-some studs.
Right.
You know, you could go look at him in the stall. You could, like you said, see him drive. You could see him in hand. And that's what I loved about it is how many people actually brought the studs for people to see.
Yeah. It's a really great thing. That's one of the things I'm most proud of the event, is that you can really, and the whole idea was a lot of, like, the first year people brought their studs and then they would bring one or two colts out of those horses. So you can see the horse himself, you could see some of his offspring, and presumably what that particular breeder thought were maybe the top end of what they had had. So you could see what they were doing well, and maybe make a more educated decision on how to breed your mare that year. So, but yeah, we had a really strong sale. So of those 120 service fees, we averaged about $950 a piece on 120 service fees, which is pretty outstanding, I thought. Pretty exciting. As far as the incentive program went, we got to see a little bit come full circle. We had sold a colt last year through the sale. Actually, one of the committee members sold him. His name was Silve Echo. Went through there, ended up being purchased by Jim Day. He won the men's card class at Louisville about 2 weeks ago. And then when he came back for the incentive program, also won the incentive program there, and is going to go on to be a breeding horse, sounds like, going to be staying at Cody Woodbury's. So we got to see, right, a horse that may not have showed up until later in life, you know, coming to the front pretty early. Same thing with the SR Cobra horse. He was a SR Whiskey's son, went through the sale last year, got purchased by AgriStore. He came back, also won the cart division of the incentive program, and will be standing for his stallion this coming year. So, it's a great place to go. If you're looking to try to find a young prospect, a Perchin or Belgian, most of the consigners are aware of the caliber we're looking for, and that's what they seem to bring, which is highlighted in our results, you'll see. So our top seller this year, we sold a yearling Perchin filly for $53,000. The overall sale average was over $9,000. I mean, our weanling average was $8,600. We ended up selling 150 head. Top 10 averaged $35,000. The top 20 averaged $28,500. So there were some pretty spectacular young horses there available for purchase. So something very different. And it's in an event, Mark, you could probably attest to the venue itself is fairly unique. It's 100% matted with those brown cushion mats. The arena is a little different. Just the whole setup is quite a bit different. And it's a slam-packed schedule. There's no sitting around wondering what's going to happen next.
Well, I think go to a regular
event center, sale, looks.
Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead, Kyle. No, well, the setup, the setup is great. I was told that when Mount Hope built that building, they were said there will never be any livestock in that building. Well, that didn't take long. I think Monroe must have twisted an arm hard enough or something. Well,
he's a sweet talker.
Yeah. it is a nice setup, pretty unique. Like Jonathan said, everything's matted. All the horses in one building, the rings in one building. Pretty good setup, pretty good deal. Like you said, I mean, it went from the morning. What time was that first class at 9 a.m. until late at night when we're done selling? It was jam packed full for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a long enough day.
Yep.
But you're not bored. I hope not. Like, it keeps you.
Didn't have time.
Yeah. So.
Well, and I think when you think of a regular sale, there's a lot going on, like at Topeka. There's workhorses, there's brood mares, there's hitch horses, there's, you know, and Gordyville's kind of centered mainly around hitch horses, and then there's a yearling market or whatever. But it just seems like this sale is focused for breeders. Like, come look at these stallions, check the stallions out, and kind of get a real look at a lot of these prominent stallions that are standing, and then a lot of the breeders themselves are going to bring high quality foals and yearlings to market, to showcase their program, I guess would be
correct. And it gives them an opportunity, you know, with breeding. One of the issues, and we run into this with raising horses, you really can't keep them all, right? To see how they're all going to be as 3-year-olds and get them driving good and see how they're going to be as 4-year-olds, right? There is a finite amount of horses that most people can keep. So some of these horses may have gotten held back and try to be 3-year-olds, but this way it really gives those breeders an opportunity to bring to the limelight what they think is a really strong baby or a strong yearling early on, and get them out into the public. And so far it's It's only been 2 years, but we've been very happy with our results.
How did it compare? Like, obviously the first year was a huge success. Your year two now, was there a bit of a drop off? Was it stayed pretty strong? Is it starting to take shape? Like, you have to bring an elite one, or like, how did, when you really evaluate it after 2 years now, what's your gut feeling on it all?
We were down a little over last year, which I think is indicative of the time, right? But like our Stein service fee auction, we were at 1,000. This year we're at 950, so not awful lot. Our weanling average for last year was 8650. This year it's 8600. So now our yearlings, we saw a little bit of a decrease on the average. And I wonder if part of that doesn't have to do with the fact that on our first year, we allowed yearlings to come in that were maybe being held back, right, from sales or whatever, and gave them an opportunity to bring them out. Now, if I had my best weanling, I didn't let it develop to a yearling, right? It came to the sales. So I still thought we had a really strong lineup of yearlings, but the market may have impacted that more than I think. I'm not entirely sure, but yearlings were down. Sale average last year was about 10,000. This year, about 9,000. So
it stayed pretty steady.
A lot of these, breeders could sign, and some of these guys buy them back. Now, correct. Walk us through that. The only thing they have to pay is the commission on that. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. They pay the commission and makes them eligible to come back and participate in the program. But we sold 150, and I think it's real close to like 120 horses actually changed hands. So it's not a large percentage of the auction that gets bought back.
Well, on the flip side of that, I mean, some people view that as a negative, that somebody would buy back. And it's not necessarily, it shouldn't really necessarily be viewed as a negative. It's more of a breeder saying to them, you know, I'm putting this horse in the sale. If it brings X amount of dollars, that's fantastic. If it doesn't, I want to bring that horse back to the incentive program myself.
Correct.
And promote my program.
Exactly. And because we do, I do lean on some people that get spots in the sale. I do. They say, well, I've got a filly, but I really don't want to sell her. And I said, that's the one I want. Right. Give the public the opportunity to appraise and see if it's worth as much more or less of what you think. And if it's in that ballpark to where you would want to sell it, we're giving you the opportunity to actually do that. And if it doesn't bring that, and you think enough of it that you want to come back and compete and prove that maybe you were right with your appraisal, we're welcome to that. So, but yeah, there absolutely are some, but not a ton. So, a lot of people bring them with the intent of selling. So, but yeah, it's been a great thing. It keeps us busy for sure, and always looking for ways to grow. So if you're listening to this and we're at the Eastern Breeders Sale, we are very open to constructive input. We're always looking for ways to make it better. Monroe, he's big on drawings. We actually have a suggestion thing in our book, and if you fill it out and throw it in a box for a drawing at the end of the sale, we drew 5 names, $100 a piece, right? Just for input. We're always looking to try to find ways to make the sale better. And this year we made quite a few adjustments on things that we had done last year that didn't quite work out. So,
nobody ever has paid me too much for input.
dang, pay me $500. I'll give you 5 things. Might not be helpful, but
I usually get the bird when I give input around my house anyhow.
Yeah. So, but yeah. And as far as, we do try to limit the numbers, right, to like that 160, 170 number, just because while that is a cool big building, we are limited on space. We can only have so much there, and we want to try to keep it as a select sale. We give everybody that sells a horse, per consignor, gets one spot for the following year, not per horse, per consignor. So if you had 3 spots this year, you're guaranteed one for next year. And we do a drawing for the remaining spots. So We do that around April. We did have a box. Once again, we had a box that you can submit there at the sale to be drawn in April. But if you do would like to have the opportunity for a spot at the sale, you can email me. My email is jd@cushfarms.com or text me 330-447-8500. We'll get your info, get you in the box, and have you in for that drawing there in April.
Very good.
Cool.
So what's this upcoming season look like for you guys? You guys going to be showing some hauler, or are you just going to be hanging out at Oak Haven Stalls?
There's every year has the plan of showing hauler. This year with the world shows this year, right? Yeah. So we did leave some stuff at home this year, letting it grow up, not trying to push some stuff with anticipation of trying to take quite a few around next year. So that is the current plan. I think we picked out like 9 the other day, which that's not going to happen. But that's the potential list at this point. So
I learned very quickly with Jonathan, if you're winning, he will help you and be at your the second he doesn't think you have a chance to win, he is jumping ship.
That is not true.
He thinks can. I mean, Sunday morning after we sucked Saturday night at Indiana this year, he was to Oak Haven Stalls so fast. I mean, it was like now, lightning McQueen out of our stalls.
Let's be fair here. Paige was in a delicate state and they were short of main roller. And I just went over. They were in the first heat, I think. I just went over to help throw in a couple mains.
He showed up that morning with an Oak Haven hoodie on. I know that. just to finish this up here, what's the secret? Is it mane and tail shampoo? Is it
for what?
Do you use Jardine Secret to make your hair?
I do. I love Jardine Secret.
No, on your hair. I'm talking your hair. Oh, I'm talking horse's hair. Like what? What's the secret? Is that the secret? Is it Jardine's secret? Is there in your shower?
No, it's that's genetic, man. That's my answer. Yeah, it's just.
Yeah, I'm kind of a little embarrassed. Mark's so embarrassed about his hair, he didn't even turn his camera on his.
Nobody wants me.
No, I might have better hair than all my brothers, but they're all a lot skinnier, so everything's a trade-off, right? No,
we certainly appreciate you guys getting on and telling your story on the podcast here.
You bet. Thanks for having us. I love the podcast. We listen to them all the time. Really, really enjoyable. You guys do a great job.
As smooth as talkers as both you were, I'm sure that you'll be repeat guests here in the near future.
Yeah. All righty, guys. Well, this
all right. Well, thanks for coming on, guys.
You bet.
Thank you, guys. Good to see you, Logan.
Oh, just a way.
Oh, dang it. I thought it would
almost. Hey, take care.
Bye.
Yeah, thanks, all right, guys.
Thanks. Have a good day.
You too.
Summit Professional Services, a marketing team that specializes in all things equine. The Summit team is a full-service media and designing firm that offers the absolute top quality and design to the equine industry. The Summit team is excited to announce their new and upcoming website that will allow you to view, purchase, and download photos and videos all from the tip of your fingers. Interested in promoting your farm or getting an on-farm shoot of your horses or products? Now is the perfect time to do so. Be sure to look them up. They're on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Call Summit Professional Services 260-702-9929 or email them at summitproservices@gmail.com. Once again, their phone number 260-702-9929 or email summitproservices@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you drop by our Reinhold Tack and Western Wear mailbag, podcast@naclassicseries.com. Once again, podcast@naclassicseries.com. Any questions or feedback you might have, we would love to hear from you. I hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great week, and we'll see you down the road.